Welcome to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast,
where every week we strive to lead younger generations on a path to virtue through the insight of Stoic teachings and personal stories from our lives as Gen Z Stoics.
Welcome back to another episode of the Gen Z Stoic Podcast, where today we will be having an open discussion around why our generation is in desperate need of Stoicism. I am your co-host, Mateo.
And I'm your co-host, Ren. And based off of many, many personal interactions that we've had, really within the past year, this isn't something where it's we're going to, fearmonger or anything like that. But Gen Z is kind of in a rock and a hard place where we really are the first generation, maybe millennials were the first generation to grow up 100% inundated by technology, where we always have a phone, right next to us where we can grab and there's just instant information and we're inundated with a bunch of things. So our generation, because we have grown up knowing that, the only thing that we know is jumping from place to place and kind of wandering around aimlessly through life. And that's why, again, we always mention when we started the podcast, the number one intention of the podcast is to establish purpose and intention within our generation because of this cycle where because we are inundated with technology and these really bad examples within leadership, whether it's political or celebrities or whatever, showing us how to live life, we kind of as a generation now, not everybody, but generally seem to be walking around aimlessly and seem to be a lot more lost at this point in life than many previous generations. And that combined with, a lot of financial despair, I remember reading a study about how Gen Z won't be able to afford a house. These factors all combine to one kind of solution, in our opinion, and that is Stoicism. So today we're going to be talking about three specific ways that Stoicism specifically highlights and aids in the problems that Gen Z is facing. And number one is mental health. So I can just start out by saying that Stoicism, while not the primary, sole basis behind these two theories, Stoicism inspired cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and logotherapy. These are two of the biggest kind of psychiatric therapies and theories out there. Many therapists, many mental health professionals employ CBT or they employ logotherapy, psychiatrists employ logotherapy. And Stoicism is really kind of the basis behind these trains of thought. And why does Gen Z need this? Look at the mental illness rates in our generation. Look at the rate of our generation that is depressed or is anxious, certainly through no fault of their own. But we need a solution for that. And we can't count on some higher power, some lawmaker, somebody fixing it. So the solution, Stoicism. Stoicism, the school, the train of thought that has inspired many of these therapies, if we practically apply that, and these therapies, which I'm assuming they work if they've been around for a while and they're still in use, then we can judge that if we apply Stoicism on a generational level, then a lot of these mental health problems that we will see, they won't go away. They won't be gotten rid of 100%. But it will aid in when you feel socially anxious or when you feel depressed about a topic and you apply the mindset of Stoicism or CBT where it's mindset-based, not outcome-based, it's your perception of it, then suddenly, which is something we've both realized, you seem to mellow out and you seem to kind of stabilize emotionally and mentally so that, if you were experiencing a depressive episode, if you're anxious, it's not going to go away. It's not like reading this book's going to cure it. But it in large part will help because it changes your mindset and your approach to addressing mental illness.
And it's important to note when we're talking about mental illness, right? And you mentioned the statistics that, in the world, 1 in 4 people are going to suffer from a mental disorder, at some point. And it's also posed specifically when talking about our generation that 50% of teens around the world are at risk for, they say that half of those with mental disorders show signs of this mental, disorder by the age of 14. And that is getting to be very young. But it's also with mental health, we focus so much on a solution that is based in treating symptoms, right? Like we say, oh, you're feeling depressed. Well, here's some meds, or here is like, these people aren't being asked about what their lifestyles look like, what their mindsets look like, the way that they are perceiving their lives, right? They're not being asked about these important things that can really address the root cause, that can really solve their problems. That's exactly where Stoicism comes in, because Stoicism is a school of philosophy that is deeply rooted in first conquering your mind so then you can go and conquer more in the world. So the reason that Stoicism is so important in this mental health game is because if you are addressing first, you know, your mind as a Stoic, which you should be, because that is like the biggest kind of idea behind Stoicism, is conquering yourself before you can go out and be someone bigger. That's going to help with mental health drastically. And you said it before, right? Stoicism is solely mindset based. It's, you view your problems, you know, not as bad things, but you view them as challenges to overcome, and you view them as opportunities to grow. And instead of, you know, running away from your problems, a Stoic would say, well, these problems are the only way that I can grow as an individual, and you're more likely to go head on first through these obstacles.
And it's one of the factors that specifically Stoicism addressing this mental health aspect is, if you look at, like, if we think about ethical theories, maybe like utilitarianism or just Aristotelian ethics, they don't fully address this scope of hardships are necessary. Hardships are going to happen, and hardships are something you just have to push through. And there's that resiliency aspect that our generation is missing, and that Stoicism does a really good job of highlighting. And so those go hand in hand, really. One of the biggest issues, you know, and again, I'm not placing any blame on Gen Z for having these mental illness rates, but one of the biggest issues in Gen Z is seemingly a lack of resiliency. And where that started, I really don't know. I don't know where it started in my own personal life, because 2 years ago, I wouldn't say I was a very resilient individual. But I think we can sit here and say that Gen Z seems to be a lot less resilient than previous generations. Maybe millennials. I'll keep saying that. Millennials, I sometimes throw in the same category as Gen Z because they have a lot of the same issues, went through a lot of the same things. But this resiliency factor is one of the biggest strengths of Stoicism. If there is a school, a train of thought to teach you how to be resilient, Stoicism is probably the best aspect, the best school out there, the best kind of resource that you can find to address this problem. And just simply becoming more resilient, I think, makes your mental health better. I think being resilient and being tough in the face of adversity, will you still go through, again, depressive episodes if you've been diagnosed with depression, or you still have anxiety? Of course. But being resilient, I think, is step number one. And I think our generation is really unwilling to take those steps. Our generation, you know, they go to therapy, they do these things, they get the medication. That's not always the solution. And a lot of the times it's kind of the easy way out, where I know a lot of people, and I'm not, again, trying to put any blame or shame on them, but they go to therapy and they don't really utilize it well. They view therapy as just an avenue to rant about their problems and talk down about other people and complain, really. And then whatever advice they get from their therapist, good or bad, they don't really go out and employ it. A better strategy, and one that is not really employed yet by our generation, is employing resiliency and employing practical teachings to their life that make their life better. That's what CBT is. That's what Stoicism is. And by reading these texts, and even if you try the CBT method, which is really based within Stoicism, I keep mentioning this, I feel like we can say that your mental health will improve. Now, are you going to be perfectly fixed? No. But our generation, perfectly fixed is kind of out of the window. Perfectly fixed is long gone. What we need is solutions that make our generation better and more resilient. And that's exactly what Stoicism will do. And if you read any basic teachings, whether it's the dichotomy of control, Marcus Aurelius talking about how you should never complain, how comparison is the thief of joy, all these quotes, all these concepts add up to a resilient individual. A Stoic individual, first and foremost, is a resilient individual. And in a generation lacking resiliency, that's why Stoicism is the antidote to that, to this mental health crisis, to this crisis of lack of resiliency. Stoicism is that antidote. And that's what we're sitting here or saying today with our platform, is by exploring these concepts and applying these concepts, you gain a one up because you're resilient. Something gets thrown at you, you don't curl up in a ball, you don't feel the need to go talk about it with somebody. You know how to face the situation as it approaches you. You don't need that other resource. And that's one of the greatest superpowers you can have as a human being. So I think it's very worthwhile to check out the School of Stoicism.
And it's important to note as well that when you say, you know, you don't necessarily need anybody, it's important to say, right, also that you will need a close circle. Like, it's not good to go through like life by yourself and have absolutely no close circle to discuss things about or to discuss things with. However, the thing about CBT that's interesting is if you go to the American Psychological Association's website, the APA.org, there are three things that they say that CBT is based on, and it's three core principles. One, faulty or unhelpful ways of thinking. 2, learned patterns of unhelpful behavior. And people suffering from psychological problems can learn better ways of coping. Now, this is really interesting because a lot of the times when we say, oh, you know, like a lot of the problems are, you know, you're really creating these in your own mind. Don't take our word for it. Take the APA's. And Seneca has a quote, and I know you know exactly what quote this is. He says, we are more often frightened than hurt, and we suffer more in imagination than in reality. So if you connect these two sort of ideas, right, this major mental health study from the APA and Seneca and Stoicism, it's almost the exact same thing. It's like it's basic knowledge that is being that parallels in these two different, you know, time periods. The Stoics were ahead of their time when it came to talking about things like this. So the number one thing, right, when it says unhelpful ways of thinking, the best way to stop, you know, or to prevent, at least in mental health, problems with mental health, is you got to stop the negative self-talk and playing the victim card in your own mind, like making these excuses, pulling the victim card, telling yourself you're not strong enough, because that is ultimately sort of, you know, leading to your mental health declining. When it comes to unhelpful behavior, I think that one and number three, better ways of coping, kind of go hand in hand. I think unhelpful behavior and unhealthy coping mechanisms are sort of in the same realm. So when you go through, you know, struggle or you're suffering with your mental health, I know a lot of people who say, oh, I just need to go, you know, smoke and just like relax, or I need to go and do something that is only a temporary fix. And these fixes, and, you know, I'm not shaming weed, okay? I'm not shaming the use of these things. But what I am saying is it's important to make the distinction between I'm not doing this and it's not making my problems go away. It's just making me feel better for now. These temporary fixes are not the permanent solution to a problem. They do not actually address the problem, but the reason it feels good is because you're altering the state of your mind to feel better, which is ultimately proving that these problems are more so created in your own mind than in reality. And we are suffering more in our own imagination than what is actually happening. You see people, you know, talk about, they have these big issues and you're like, okay, well, walk me through it. And then they walk you through it, you know, step by step, writing it down. It's very simple. And they say, oh, I guess it's not so bad. There's a lot of things, if you really break it down, that I can control that I don't need to worry about. And so that's ultimately the biggest thing, is changing your mindset around your problems and your struggles is what's going to really improve your mental health. If you see these as, you know, focusing on what you can control, you're ultimately going to eliminate like 90% of the problems that you have if you acknowledge you can't control them and therefore don't worry about them. But also, like you said, being resilient, right? Seeing these problems and these struggles as an opportunity to grow and to get better, instead of seeing them as something that is stronger than you, it's going to hold you down and prevent you from being better. The only way to grow is to go through that rough patch.
Yeah, and resiliency is obviously kind of, I think, the biggest factor here, but it's also just a clarity aspect where, like I said, there's certain aspects of these problems where Gen Z seems to curl up and not want to face those difficulties. They don't want to face the setbacks. They want life to be as easy as possible and just one smooth road to fulfillment. That's not, unfortunately, that's not how life works. I would prefer it if life worked that way, and many people would prefer it if life worked that way. But unfortunately, that's not how life works. It's a continuous cycle of ups and downs, and your hope is that the ups progressively get higher and higher, and the lows get progressively smaller and smaller. That's the best that you can do. And I think it's interesting, you know, you noted the APA's kind of works on this. There's also Modern Stoicism, which is a nonprofit that I highly recommend if you want to check out further Stoic content, conducted a study. I believe it was in Europe. I'm not entirely sure, but it's 1,200 people. They give them basically a crash course in Stoicism, tell them to go out and practice it, and then give them a questionnaire before and after about their well-being. Now, these people, regular people taken off the street, 1,200. So their findings from this study was that they had just had significant improvements in their well-being overall. That's the first and foremost, the number one finding, is they reported, self-reported, significant improvements in well-being. And the most interesting thing that I remember from this study is that the quality that they most associated with Stoicism wasn't resiliency, it wasn't being cold, it wasn't rejecting people, it was energy, and it was enthusiasm. And that's because people looked forward to life's challenges now, because they could easily get over them. So they see people who are just like them struggle with these hardships, and they're looking forward to it. They're getting through it. They're pushing through it. It's a very powerful feeling. And these are people who just got a crash course in Stoicism. So that's two, we highlight two really important real world examples, because obviously you can't just take our word for it. But as two college students who, you know, don't really have a background in this, it's important to highlight where we kind of get our reasoning from. And when you look at these real world examples, are you surely going to have people who don't use Stoicism properly and then it leads to bad results? Yes, but that's within any kind of basic principle. It's not universal. But if we're looking to a solution, it's not, oh, subsidize mental health care, or, you know, go to talk therapy, or any of these things, because we are already proving that the conventional methods don't work when our generation does go to therapy. Our generation does participate in what are these normal kind of theories on how to approach mental health. And it's not working for us. It's simply not. If it was working, then we wouldn't have these problems to talk about. And I would greatly prefer that. But unfortunately, the reality is that the current solution does not work. So when we are exploring what does work, maybe let's look at the numbers and let's see these studies where people improve their well-being just from being taught this school. And it's great because it's not one of these things where it's like a barrier to entry like therapy is, where you have to pay an enormous cost. Hopefully insurance covers it, but insurance is not reliable. You don't really want to rely on insurance. But there's these barriers of entry. Stoicism doesn't really have a barrier of entry. Like I mentioned, that nonprofit Modern Stoicism free website, you know, you can find these books for free. And then all it is going out and applying it. So it's 100% user driven, and there's a lot less barriers to entry. So overall, all encompassing, we highlighted resiliency, become a much more resilient individual. You become much clearer, and even studies show you become much more enthusiastic about the problems that are ahead of you. You have a lot more energy to face those problems, which is going to result in a lot more success, a lot better results when you're faced with these setbacks, because you want energy. You want energy when you're faced with a setback. You don't want to be, you know, depressed and dark and have no energy and you're down in the dumps when you face a setback. You want to be energetic and you want to push through it. Stoicism does that. And just thinking, you know, economically, no barrier to entry, and it's very, very easy to use, and it's 100% user driven. So when looking at this mental health crisis, I would say that Stoicism probably is close to the solution. Maybe not Stoicism, just Stoicism itself, but Stoicism tied in with other philosophy, you know, Buddhism and Stoicism very closely relate when it comes to, you know, these talks of resiliency and mental health. But analyzing these resources is a much better strategy than sitting there and struggling and doing nothing about it. And that's what a lot of our generation is doing, or they're flailing in these current solutions that don't work. So rather than doing those two options, which suck and lead to a lot of negative outcomes, we sit here today and say, check out Stoicism, check out philosophy, because it's been proven time and again to be an effective solution to the problems that face you.
Absolutely. And I think that was very well said. And I think when it comes to resiliency, that is a great segue into the second big topic that we're going to talk about, and that is fulfillment through purpose. And the reason I say it's a good segue is because when you are, you know, seeking purpose and you are fulfilled through your purpose, it's a lot easier to be resilient when you come across, you know, hardship. And I say this because if you are someone who's sort of walking aimlessly and you come across hardship and you don't know what your purpose is, you're going to mostly avoid it. But if you know exactly what your purpose is and a hardship gets in the way, you're going to get through it because you know what your purpose is and you're seeking fulfillment through purpose. Now, how does this relate to our generation? Well, it sort of is going to tie actually into the third topic as well. And they sort of go hand in hand, but we'll get into that in a moment. But the thing about purpose in our generation and why purpose is lacking is, one, I mean, the big enemy here, not the sole enemy, but a big contributor to why people are purposeless is, one, complacency. And I say complacency specifically because when you look at, and I'm, oh gosh, we bring up social media in every single episode, it seems like. But it's important to note because our podcast is ultimately a guide to life in the digital age, you know, using Stoic philosophy is what we say. So it's important to bring up social media when talking about complacency because we feel, you know, when we scroll on social media for hours and hours and hours, we're wasting this time away and we're telling ourselves that we're going to have more time. And it's sort of, you know, completely enveloped our society, you know, phones. If you go to the, I went to the airport the other day, right, to fly home, and I'm walking through the gate, the terminals to get to my gates, and I'm looking around, and every single person, like 99% of people, are just right here, just stuck. And so there is no, and there's no talking. And this is really going to go into interpersonal relationships, which is our third topic. But the reason it's so important to talk about why, you know, social media is leading us to be complacent is because when you're complacent, you think there is no way for you to improve, or there is no need to improve or to get better. And if you are someone who is deeply rooted in your own purpose, you know that that is untrue. You know that you're never going to be truly satisfied. You can be proud of yourself at times, and you can celebrate your small wins, but there's always something more to be done in the grand scheme of things, right? The way life works, it's not, we've sort of placed it as this pyramid, right? That there is a top, that there is a, you know, top place to be where you can't go any higher. But the reason they call it the circle of life is because there's always something in front of you. There's always going to be something in front of you. It goes in this circle, right? So you're never going to be fully fulfilled. But the best way to feel as fulfilled as possible is through being deeply rooted in your purpose.
Yeah. And I'd like to start off, it's kind of ironic. Every time I do a Stoic reading, the reading I do relates exactly to the episode we do the next week. So Seneca, letter 7, talks about how human beings innately, when we are in a crowd, lose some of our moral character. We lose some of our standing. Easy phenomenon to kind of conceptualize. How many times when you are in a group of people do you do things that you normally wouldn't do when you're alone? Quite frequently. And you and I both are still the same way. We're not perfect in this regard, and I don't think anybody can be. When you are, again, inundated with a bunch of influences, more likely than not, one of them is going to take root. And more likely than not, if you're in a crowd of, you know, 100 people, that influence is not going to be positive. It's not going to be somebody who leads you in the right direction. If it is, that's great, but that's not going to be generally how that works. And the issue now is previous generations, that meant that, you know, you have your high school friends and you're growing up and you might have, you know, the bad influence friend in the local town, but it stops at that town. And then, you know, you move on, you have college, and it's just the cycle of the people, you get to really choose who you have around you, right? It's not really the case anymore with social media. In our generation and millennials, the world is interconnected. And that's great. I think the world should be interconnected. You know, we talk about the concept of cosmopolis and how we are all one society supposed to thrive together. So I think the world being connected and talking to each other is great. But inevitably, what that leads to is, again, an inundation of just different influences. You scroll through your feed and there's 7 different influences. There's Andrew Tate. And then there's, I don't really know what the opposite of Andrew Tate is, but there's the opposite of Andrew Tate. And then so it's just a variety of different influences. And then, you know, you have a gym influencer, and then you have somebody who eats a lot and films it and is proud of that. And then you have a right wing political page and then a left wing political page. And it's all these different influences that kind of tear you from where your roots are. What Stoicism says to that is there are 4 things you have to worry about. You have to worry about being courageous. You have to worry about being wise. You have to worry about how you regulate yourself and how you can be temperate. You have to worry about being a just and fair person. Pretty simple, right? Pretty easy rules to live by. I find it very easy to be a just person. It's a lot harder to learn how to be wise. I find it very easy to be courageous. And it's easy, with a little bit of work, to regulate yourself. These are easy tasks for you to do. And it's 4 things. Nobody else out there is telling you to do just 4 things and your life is going to be successful. And if they are, they probably want to charge you money for that, to find out what those 4 things are, to have them teach you those 4 things. The beauty is, if you want to learn those 4 things with Stoicism, all you have to do is go to your library and pick up a book. Same thing with the first concept is, that's the reason why Stoicism is so easy to build a purpose off of, is because it's simple, it's very easy to apply, and it's very easy to pick up and find. It's not something where you have to go through this training program, or you have to listen to a bunch of BS, you know, lectures, or something like that, where, you know, you have to go through 4 years of college and you get a degree. It's none of that. None of that hardship that doesn't really pay off anymore. It's more just these books and these 4 cardinal virtues, because when you're living this way virtually, it seems kind of counterintuitive. But again, we mention this all the time. If you're a really just person, really courageous, and you have an apt amount of wisdom and you know how to regulate yourself and be temperate and not really overindulge, and you're homeless, The reality is that you actually can feel more fulfilled in that position than if you're a politician who's very corrupt, very greedy, and doesn't live any of these values. Do they have money? Sure, but their soul has become corrupted. And that's really what the fight for our generation is whether our generation is going to kind of go to these negative spaces where your soul becomes corrupted and you don't live virtuously, or if it's going to take a different approach. Maybe you don't have to live all four of these values perfectly, but a different approach where we prioritize purpose and fulfillment. And so that's what Stoicism is really important towards with our generation, is we currently are in a fight. And I don't like to use these kind of clickbait words or fearmonger or anything like that, but that's really where we are. We are at a crossroads with our generation where we're either going to, from what I've seen, especially with people who are a lot younger than me who are still in Gen Z, we're either going to have a generation that has YouTuber interactions where like they prank each other and it's this Riz, Baby Gronk, Livy Dunn lingo that I hate so much. And we're no longer going to have a regular human society. We're going to have a society that looks up and worships YouTubers and interacts with each other like they're on YouTube and they're in an online space and wants to do everything for views and for clout. Or are we going to have a regular generation that lives in the real world and wants a job, wants a family, wants to provide, and wants a purpose? That's the crossroads we're at. And walking, I challenge you, walking down the street and observing a lot of our generation, how can you not conclude that? How can you not conclude that with so many, I'm not going to say awful people, because I don't think a person can be awful, but people who have been led astray. And it's not their fault. It's not really our fault as a generation, but we have to embrace purpose. We have to embrace fulfillment. And if you want the simplest, easiest way to do that for the cheapest, for just the easiest to apply, it's Stoicism.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you said it's not necessarily our fault as a generation that the things that we're exposed to are here, but it is our responsibility to then respond accordingly, right? You said, you know, we really are at a crossroads. It really is between this, you know, this superficial online. And granted, I know we're online. However, we're not posting things simply for clout, views, whatever. All these lingo terms that now exist in the realm of virtual living and existence. But we are at this crossroads where it's now come between living a life that is truly purposeful and actually living in person. We do not live in person anymore. Most of us, I mean, I know plenty of people who live through social media and through an online presence, but in the real world, there is nothing. And I actually like to think sometimes that, you know, if there were an apocalypse where we had no electricity, no nothing, and it was just us, I know all the people that are going first, man. It's a lot larger than it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, which really isn't all that much time different, but isn't that much of a time gap, right? But because our society has changed so drastically and just the things we have chosen to put emphasis on and to turn our focus to, it's sort of becoming a problem. Now, granted, we can talk about this all day, but I mean, these apps that are really keeping our attention and that are, okay, not only keeping our attention, but completely destroying our attention span in general and our ability to be focused individuals, they're meant to do that. I mean, these huge, you know, companies like Meta and Facebook, Instagram, whatever, are designed to keep you glued to your phone. Now, we have to realize that, right? And we're saying, oh yeah, but I have time. And that goes back into the complacency aspect that I was talking about earlier. Is we're saying, yeah, like I know I'm addicted, but I have time. Like there's always tomorrow. What if tomorrow doesn't come? You know, you are lucky to wake up each day. And as Marcus Aurelius says, you know, each day you wake up is a chance to be a better individual. And he didn't say this verbatim, but as he says, each day is a chance, you know, to be better. 1% better, constant improvement, constant evolution of the mind is what Stoicism is about. And now when we're unfocused and we're aimless, it's more prevalent now than ever. We see, and we talked about this before, but people are growing up faster at a younger and younger age. They're growing up quicker. And it is because mostly of just this societal culture change that we have with giving people technology at a younger age. They're just exposed to so much more of the world at a younger age, which 20, 30 years ago was not an issue. But now that we are, you know, first, second, third grade getting, I mean, supercomputers in the size of our hands or in our pocket, the size they can fit in a pocket and we're holding them in our hand, right? It is Yeah, that was not well said, but you get the idea. It's a problem because now we are reinforcing the idea in our mind that we do not need to be focused. We are literally changing the neuroplasticity. We're changing the neuroplasticity in our brains to be unfocused, and our dopamine receptors are fried at a younger age, and there is no more focus. So, sorry to go on a tangent, but the only way to find fulfillment through purpose and to further develop your interpersonal relationships, you have to be a focused individual. You cannot be led astray by these distractions that are purposely being given to you to keep you, you know, almost a slave to this system, a slave to this society, right? You have to open your eyes. You have to look up off the screen, and you have to really look around you at what the world is, not what it is perceived to be through a screen.
Yeah, and I think it's human nature really to not be focused if we're offered 20 different things to look at. I like to – one analogy I heard recently that I really love is like viewing social media as like the town square. Back during maybe – I guess if we want to use the Romans, it was the forum. Social media is the forum. However, the forum during Roman time was just that town. It was just that group of people. And so if you have one crazy dude who's sitting up on a soapbox and saying these insane things to get attention, it's very easy to dismiss that person because you're just like, oh, it's one crazy person. But social media, and also with that, there's usually societal consequences for that crazy person getting up in the forum and saying crazy things. However, with social media now, there's none of those societal consequences. And so it enables that instead of a small town forum where you have maybe one or two crazy people and you can kind of go there to do what you came to do and get out, with social media, it's a worldwide forum. There are thousands of crazy people on their little box who is saying these crazy things just to get your attention and keep you entertained so they can make money off of you. And you can't really leave. Unfortunately, you can delete social media as much as you want, but there's a small aspect, unless you are realizing a miracle where you can quit social media and you can get all your close friends to quit social media and get your family to quit social media, then at that point, maybe you're released from the bonds of social media. But the likelihood that you're going to get, I'm assuming, you know, with your close friend circle and family, 10, 15 people, the likelihood you're going to get 10 to 15 people, especially if they're our age, to quit social media, very unlikely. So the reality is you're never leaving that forum. And so instead of just going in, getting what you need from it and getting out, you're inundated with, oh, look at this, how to get abs in one day. Oh, a new Sam Sulek video. I love Sam Sulek. I'm not calling him out here, but, and then, you know, or, oh, makeup tutorial. Like, you're just thrown all of these things while you're on your path to maybe go get some fruit from the forum. So it's an analogy I really love, but it highlights the fact that we aren't focused, and that's fine. It's innately human if we're given all of these distractions to not be focused. But the reality is, step number one is awareness on that and detachment from that. And that's what I love not only about Stoicism, but about virtue ethics as a whole, is there's no 40 different things thrown at you. There's one sole thing, and that's virtue. That's living in accordance with nature. That's all it is. That's all virtue ethics is the pursuit of that. And so if you have one thing purely, which is virtue, to focus on, it makes your life a lot easier. And then maybe you aren't as stressed out anymore. And you'll notice that these three themes that we are talking about today tie together. So you become focused, you focus on that purpose, you're less distracted, you get less stressed out, you're less anxious about things, less worried about the future, because you have this one end goal in mind instead of the 20 things that your feet has told you to do today. So just something to consider.
And I think it's important to note that you said, you know, it's really not that complicated. It's a very simple way of living. Stoicism, right? We have the four cardinal virtues: temperance, wisdom, justice, and courage. So if you are walking through your day, you can fit almost every single event and thing that happens to you and feeling and emotion into one of these four cardinal virtues the pillars of Stoicism, right? And like you said, virtue is living in accordance with our favorite capital N, nature. That is the sole goal and purpose of Stoicism, is to be virtuous by living in accordance. Now, to be in accordance means to be in a harmonious relationship, right? It's almost like a flow. It needs to be like this constant, you know, interweaving flow state. in my mind, that's sort of how I imagine it, right? Is being in accordance with nature is accepting what is, what the truth really is, and not trying to, you know, go out of your limits.
So one final note about fulfillment before we kind of move on to our next topic is, I would be remiss without saying that family plays a huge impact in this. And now, I obviously am somebody who, I really like the concept of a nuclear family. I really like the idea of me personally having a wife and two kids and a dog, and I have a nice house. I like that. I like that concept. And I think that's my concept, and family can take a lot of different shapes. But the importance in our generation of family is the fact that it's disintegrated. Now, you don't even have to have a two-parent family or even a family with parents. We talk about all the time, especially in our family episode, how family is what you want it to be. It's who you make it to be. However, the problem is we have not prioritized family anymore. In the traditional nuclear sense, in the sense of non-traditional families or families where it's just a group of close friends who rely on each other, we haven't prioritized any of that. And that's where I think, in tandem with social media, we have seen a lot of disintegration of values. You look at these generations now, very disrespectful to their parents on average. Now, I'm not advocating for any different parenting styles here. I don't have kids, so I don't know how to parent yet. Maybe in the future I will. But it's because of these disintegration of values that we see this familial disrespect. And this disrespect, if it starts at home, it's going to go outwards. If you can't respect your own parents, there's no chance that you're going to respect another person if they challenge you or have another view from you. And that's what we see, right? We don't respect each other anymore, especially in our generation. A lot of drama, a lot of disrespect if people aren't perfectly on your terms. It's just something that we have recognized as a generation, is we need it to be for us or we don't respect you. And where that starts is within the home. So I would be remiss without pointing that out. And so why this is important is Stoics emphasize, again, capital N nature, living in accordance with nature. And therefore, they viewed having a family and childbearing as in accordance with nature. So if we're living in accordance with nature, it doesn't have to be a traditional family. I'll keep emphasizing that. But prioritizing family is one of the biggest things a Stoic can do. And so to tie into that purpose and that fulfillment, we need to return a little bit to prioritizing that family and prioritizing that respect within the family. Because these ethics, these virtues, start within the family. I think one of the credits that we never give is both of us having really strong mothers who are very good parents and very good to us is part of the reason that we have kind of embraced Stoicism and are able to, I think, want to live as virtuously as possible, is because that's kind of the vision that our parents set out for us. And so we are two good examples of really fantastic parents, really fantastic households that have taught us these values that we now want to emphasize and prioritize. It's not always the case. And I think, again, it's not 100% our fault. It's not 100% our parents' fault, but it's something where we need to, again, address this problem. Because while social media and all of those problems are great, if we don't address the fact that families are disintegrating, especially within the Western world, then we're never going to recover. Because if we don't have a base unit of family to teach us ethics or living virtuously or just living with any kind of moral character, then not only are we going to live aimlessly, like you said, we're going to live destructively, because we will have nobody who has taught us how to live in a cohesive way with each other. So that's the second and kind of final point that I'd like to make about fulfillment is, yes, social media is bad, and I love the forum example, and Stoicism is a great way to establish kind of getting away from social media and a fulfilling purpose. But part of that purpose has to be family. It has to be. Not only Stoicism, but just in a societal level, it has to be. And Stoicism is somebody who teaches greatly about how that's in accordance with nature and something we have to do. And so it's just another tool in your tool belt when you're looking at purpose and fulfillment that Stoicism brings to the table.
Right. And it's important to note that you're not saying, you know, it has to be simply because the Stoics said so. If you look at it objectively, it only makes sense, right, that you are prioritizing your family, the people closest to you, right? I think we can both agree on that. But yeah, that's absolutely right. The family aspect. And I think it's important that you did bring up that, you know, families are, like you said, disintegrating and divorce rates are higher than they've ever been, because those are important statistics to note, like why, you know, certain individuals may be more compelled to look up to these social media role models is because they don't have any at home, right? So it's almost a loop. You can tie in the connections. You can really see why these things are so important to address. Moving to the third point, interpersonal relationships, this is also, that's like a good tie, because when you have these, you know, children, who are raised at home in these corrupt families, they also not only struggle, you know, in their families, but they struggle with their friends and outside of the house as well. Now, when it comes to the watching people interact today, certain people, not everybody, but like you said, the lingo that's being used is, it's brain rot. That is the only way that I can use to describe sort of the, you know, and every generation has had slang, but we are by far the worst generation.
Ours is the most brain dead lingo.
Like these words don't even make sense anymore. You know what I mean? And so the way that we interact has just become so skewed from what I guess a stoic society would look like. We've sort of de-emphasized, you know, putting meaning behind words. We don't really care about what we say. We kind of just say whatever. It's easy to say whatever, especially on social media. And people really only know how to interact over text. There are many people I know that are far better texters than they are conversing in person, which to me seems like a huge issue. And I know it may not seem like that big of a deal. Like, oh, well, if they can text it, then what's the problem? What happens if we can't text? If you cannot have a conversation face to face with someone about something very important and they're like, oh, actually, can I text this to you instead? And we just sit here in silence. Like, that's not good. And they say knowledge is power. And we have sort of, and this is not an interpersonal relationship, but this is a relationship with knowledge that we've sort of developed. You hear this all the time. Oh, well, I have, you know, the internet at the click of a button. Why would I really need to learn anything? Well, here's the issue. It's not about knowing facts that make somebody smart, but it's knowing how to think. And so if you aren't developing your, you know, your cognitive thinking skills and your critical thinking skills and ultimately just trying to become a smarter, higher IQ individual, right? Not even higher IQ, but just trying to become better at, you know, thinking through hard situations and challenging yourselves. It's not going to do anything. You could know all the facts in the world, but if you are not, you know, if you don't have what's called, you know, common sense, I guess, and the ability to solve problems, it's useless. Absolutely useless.
So we have to cover what Stoicism offers in terms of interpersonal relationships. And first and foremost, we can lead with the concept of cosmopolitanism, where we view every person, as Seneca puts it, as an opportunity for kindness, which is something our generation doesn't do anymore. I don't think we walk through life saying, wow, that person, you know, they look a little bit disheveled. That's an opportunity for kindness. We don't think that way. Again, we're a very self-serving generation. And as a result, we don't view human beings that way anymore. Again, it leads to that kind of disrespect that I talked about just briefly before here. And ultimately, that's the disintegration of relationships, right? If we can't come to a basic level of human respect anymore, which, especially on the internet, I think we can agree, we have kind of sunk below a level of agreed upon human dignity and decency that I would like to see, and I think many people would like to see. And I think it's important to highlight that I don't even think that's a majority of our generation, really. I think that's a minority who don't have the ability to form those basic relationships, but it's a significant enough percentage to be very concerned. If we have even 20% of our generation who can't maintain basic healthy relationships that are based in the real world, then we're screwed. We're screwed because a fifth of our generation not being able to interact in a productive manner leads to an entirely unproductive generation. You can't, you know, I think humanity, just like with a lot of things, is only as strong as its weakest link. So we can't just cast aside these people who are, you know, 14-year-olds who show up to the rec center and ask if they can riz you up and have these terrible lingo that is not even comprehensible, really. And I'm glad you said I can interact with people really well, because I can't interact with those people really well. I don't understand the lingo. I just sit there and I'm like, what did you just say? That didn't sound like English. But outside of those people, I think what Stoicism teaches us is that we need to race our relationships in the real world. And I think Seneca is a very, very good teacher when it comes to that. He has several letters which cover how to be a good friend and how to maintain those relationships. And I think that this is where, you know, it's kind of the unconventional Stoicism, you know, they rejected friendships and they, you know, they didn't have friends. And if you don't have friends, that's a marker of a good Stoic, all that kind of BS. It's not true. Seneca wrote his letters to one of his best friends. He taught on how to maintain strong friendships. You know, if you don't have a ton of friends, that's not necessarily important to a Stoic, but a Stoic teaches you how to build strong and meaningful friendships. And I think that's kind of the counterintuitive message that Gen Z needs. Because right now, what we have is we have people who want a bunch of friends, but none of them matter, rather than a small amount of friends who do matter. We have a generation that would much, much more like to be popular than to be fulfilled. That's a problem. And, you know, maybe as we mature, and certainly I think that's an aspect we need to mention is, again, 19, 18, our brains haven't fully developed and the people around us who we kind of base these interactions off of and our teachings off of, our personal stories off of, haven't fully matured yet. So there's a small part of me that thinks that maybe they mature and that changes, but we haven't seen it yet. And if it doesn't happen, then we need this message that it is much more fulfilling and it leads to a much more productive and more cohesive society if we have a small amount of friends and we prioritize that and meaning over just being popular. Because then we get into a popularity contest where we have a YouTuber generation who interacts, again, for clout, and they do these things just because they want to be funny or something, and they don't worry about the consequences of their actions. And then again, a lot of risk if there's such a significant part of our generation not worrying about the consequences of their actions, just in the name of being popular or being funny or any of these things that really don't matter. It doesn't matter if you're funny. It doesn't matter if you're popular, and that's what Stoicism, especially Seneca, teaches. So again, if we're looking in terms of how do I fix my personal relationships, how do I build these strong friendships, which is something that a lot of Gen Z is struggling with, whether they're alone because they can't build these relationships or alone because they build relationships based off popularity and social media, both sides of the problem find one common solution, which is Stoicism, saying that you have to vet your friends and be very strict with them before they become your friends. But once they are your friends, don't base your relationship off of social media. Don't base it off of anything, purely than the mutual trust and things that you share with each other, which is, it's a really simple teaching, and it results in a lot of strong
problems. On the point that you made about like the popularity contest, that's sort of the problem that I had with Tate. And the reason I bring up Andrew Tate is because he preached about Stoicism a lot. However, he said a lot of things that he didn't actually mean simply for marketing and for popularity. And that is something that a Stoic would never do. Like saying something that goes completely against what you actually believe simply to get your name out there and to get noticed, that's a big problem, right? And now even, you know, I don't really want to go into it too far, so I'm not going to, but the popularity contest is such a superficial thing because especially in the best example for our generation, high school. Some people, high school is their kingdom and they see high school as, you know, people peak in high school. You see these memes about like the guy who peaked in high school and then 10 years later, he's like working at a Pizza Hut and the, you know, quiet kid is like owning $3 trillion yachts, whatever. So it's like, it's this idea and this sort of stereotype that actually is true because if you are focused on only being popular and only your status and your reputation, which as the Stoics say, finish my sentence here.
Don't worry about your reputation. You can't control it.
Exactly. And so they spend all this time focused on something that they cannot control. Completely wasted, you know, 4 years of your life that you could have devoted to personal development and growth. So popularity, superficial. The people who are popular in high school end up at the bottom of the fishbowl as soon as they enter college or as soon as they enter the real world, because nobody cares. Also, well, actually for LA, it's not necessarily true, but let's be honest, nobody really cares how many followers you have. Like at the end of the day, it does not define a person's worth. And I've talked to you about this as well. I've met people, you know, who have hundreds of thousands of followers and are just the most normal people of all time. But because of a number on a screen, we attribute, you know, value to that. But it's false. It's this illusion that has been pulled over our head. And it's this illusion we're all living by, whether we realize it or not. Coming from a small town, there was nobody famous from where we were from. So, you know, it's very easy, maybe a couple of people. But you see, you know, these big names and you're like, oh, man, I bet they're just like a huge person. It's almost like we imagine them as just being bigger, you know, people, almost just like these giant people who just like live above everybody else. That's not the reality. And it's sort of weird at first, you know, when you see these people with millions of followers in person and you're just like, oh, they're just like a normal person. For me, that was weird because I didn't grow up in a culture where, you know, they were just walking around all the time. But back to the point, popularity contests, very bad. What would Stoics say about this? Nobody cares. You know what Marcus Aurelius didn't care about? However many followers he had on scroll talk or whatever, you know, whatever social media they had back then, like writing on scrolls and posting memes on hieroglyphs and stuff. That makes zero sense. But he would not care. If Marcus Aurelius were here today, or Seneca, they probably wouldn't even have social media. They would just be going. And if they did, it would be only to promote the truth and only the truth and what they believed in. You wouldn't see them promoting things just for clout. Also, the point you brought up about, you know, having a close circle, I like that point, because if things go really, really badly in your life and you have five close people and that is it, you can go to those five people and they will make you feel complete. They will make you feel safe. They will, you know, they will be there for you through thick and thin. However, if you have 100 friends and you're popular, but these people don't really care about you, they are close to you because you're popular and because, you know, being seen with you is cool, and things go really badly for you, at the end of the day, you are very alone and you do not want to be alone. Now, we did an episode on isolation where isolation is different than being alone. But the point is, quality over quantity, always. I believe that is a concept that was not verbatim, you know, said verbatim by the Stoics, but they would absolutely agree with it.
Yeah, and one thing that I think is kind of underlying your argument is the energy around how much you worry about these relationships and what other people care about. You waste all this energy worrying about what your perception is, what your reputation is, who likes you, who doesn't like you. And the thing about Stoicism, outside of building these meaningful relationships, is it kind of cuts out a lot of the BS energy you spend on worrying about all those things, and it makes it a lot easier. For me, one of the biggest benefits that I think Stoicism has brought to my life is I pretty instantly can tell if a person is somebody who I want around me or don't want around me. And so I don't have to worry about, you know, do I like this person? You know, what is this person about? Because I can ask these questions that Stoicism has kind of ingrained in me and just tell pretty quickly. And if you're able to tell pretty quickly about a person, and this isn't to say, you know, only let them have a first impression and then make judgments about them. Don't do that. But my point being is that you spend a lot less energy worrying about these things. And if you have all this free energy now, you can worry about things that actually matter to your life rather than who liked this post? Did so-and-so see it? Yada, yada, yada. And one quote that I would like to mention that is not Stoic whatsoever, and maybe I shouldn't mention it, Kanye West. One good girl is worth 1,000, you know what. So I think the same principle actually applies to friendships. One good friend is worth 1,000 other people. Like, should I use that quote? Maybe not, but I think that's an apt comparison. I think just simply within terms of value to your life, one good solid friend is worth 1,000 so-so ones. One good friend is worth 1,000 acquaintances.
If not more.
So prioritize those friendships, and then those acquaintances, you kind of sit into a category where they don't really matter that much. Crazy to think about, your acquaintances don't matter that much in terms of your life. It's certainly kind of a crass argument in terms of categorizing humans into that. But again, you save that energy and you can apply it to overcoming setbacks, working on things that you care about. For me, it's the podcast, the gym, and like doing school, studying, investing, all these things. I used to, you know, back before 3 years ago, before I picked up on a lot of this stuff, you know, I sit at home and I scroll through social media and I wonder why I'm not invited to things and why it seems like nobody wants to hang out with me and all these things. It's a terrible mindset to approach life with. You're always constantly anxious and worried about who cares about you. Instead, what Stoicism offers is you invest in caring about the people closest to you. And then you don't worry if you have, like you said, those five people who really care about you. You establish those strong friendships, you never have to worry about their feelings towards you. You never have to worry about, am I going to piss this person off? Am I going to anger them to the point they leave me? Are they going to, you know, just kind of ghost me? You build those strong relationships that Stoicism teaches. You don't have to worry about that. And then all of a sudden, you have those five circle of friends. You never have to worry about, oh, why don't these people want to hang out with me? Because you have these five people right here who are worth 1,000 or more people. Who cares about anybody else? But the important part is the energy you invest that went from worrying about those thousands of people and, you know, oh, why am I not being hung out with 24/7? Why do I not get attention 24/7 from people? All that energy goes to investing in those strong friendships, and they build you up to a virtuous lifestyle. So for our generation that is seemingly lonely, whether it's because of these social media connections that aren't really real, or they're genuinely lonely and they don't have any connection, social media, real world, or otherwise. A lot of us have faced that problem. I certainly have faced that problem. And I can attest that I have gotten through it using Stoic concepts. And that's the Stoic concepts of how you build relationships, how you prioritize strong relationships and strong friendships. So just taking those teachings, which are, again, easy application, applying them saves a lot of energy that's wasted currently on worrying about your reputation, which you can use to better areas. And it builds a lot healthier relationships, which, again, like we mentioned from the top, if you have healthier relationships in that close circle, again, if you need somebody for, you know, mental health is taking a turn for the worse and you need somebody to talk to, they're there for you. Maybe not the case if you don't build these relationships. So these three in tandem, mental health, fulfillment, and these interpersonal relationships, all really combine together to form a Stoic individual. And that Stoic individual invests their energy in the right places, doesn't worry about things that are outside of their control, has a grasp on how to be resilient and how to deal with their mental illness, and has really their sights set on that fulfillment and purpose. And I think that's a great way for our generation to live. However, we haven't gotten there yet. Even you and I haven't gotten there yet. But if we learn together and we grow together through Stoicism, our generation can get there. And that's really why Gen Z needs Stoicism.
And it's not about being perfect. It's about seeing improvement, which we have not seen in this generation, it seems. You know, it seems like we've actually regressed. You know, you're supposed to progress as a society, and it feels like we certainly have not done that. And it is not our fault that we have been given these circumstances, but it is our responsibility to react. And so I think, you know, those were great closing points that you made. You sort of summed it up. I don't have anything to add. So with that, this has been another episode of the Gen Z Stoic Podcast, an episode around why our generation so desperately needs this ancient school of philosophy, Stoicism. I've been your co-host, Mateo.
And I've been your co-host, Ren. Do not cancel me for using a Kanye quote.
We will see you guys next week.